Welcome, everybody, to Sports Fluent. I'm Anthony Kay. This week, we're taking a look at the AFC North. We're making our predictions for each team, who's going to make the playoffs, who's going to win the division, and it's all because of our special guest, Coach Hugh Jackson. He's a longtime coach in the NFL. He coached a couple of teams in the AFC North, so he knows them pretty well. We're also going to talk about some quarterbacks and tequila, so stick around for that. We'll then jump into the NBA. We're going to take a look at each round two matchups and what to expect moving forward. Then to the NHL. There's four teams left. Who's going to be in the Stanley Cup Finals? Then we're going to take a look at Major League Baseball, talk about some news, some surprises, and what's going on with COVID-19. Lastly, the fix, we're looking at your fantasy football team. Stay tuned for all of that next on Sports Fluent. We kick this week's show off in the AFC North. This is going to be a fun division to watch this year. You've got an elite team, two teams that you really don't know what to expect, and one team that's on the come up. So we start with them. The Cincinnati Bengals should have a very high-powered offense this year. Second-year coach Zach Taylor is set to put his stamp on this offense, and he's supposed to be an offensive guru. So let's see what he can do. He's got his quarterback in first overall pick, Joe Burrow. A.J. Green is back and supposedly healthy. Tyler Boyd, John Ross, and Joe Mixon in the backfield. There's no reason this team should not score a lot of points. My concern is their defense. I also am not a huge fan of Burrow's, so when I'm making my predictions, I'm going to say the Bengals will finish fourth in this division, and they're going to be lucky to win 5 to 6 games, but if I had to put a number on it, I'm going with 5-11. Then to the Cleveland Browns. Yes, the Browns. I know this is supposed to be their year, and last year was supposed to be their year, and the year before that was supposed to be their year. Unfortunately, I see a highly talented team that's just not going to be able to get it done consistently enough, and really only because of Baker Mayfield. I think he's a good quarterback, but I don't think he's a great quarterback. He's also had to go through multiple coaches, multiple systems, and I'm not seeing the development out of a young quarterback that matches that cocky attitude. If he was half as good as he is cocky, this team would be in the Super Bowl conversation, but they're not. They're going to be in the 7-9, or if they go on a late run, 8-8 team. So look for the Browns to finish, sadly, at 7-9. Then the top two teams in this division and the second place team, who will definitely be in the wild card conversation, my prediction is that they're going to finish at 10-6 and they will be in the wild card, is going to be the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think we're all forgetting how good the Steelers are, or at least were. Ben Roethlisberger missed a year, and they still finished 8-8. Their defense was solid, and look for them to improve again this year over last year. And now, all of a sudden, you're going to have an offense, which they didn't have last year. They were able to hold opponents to under 20 points a game. And I'm telling you, Ben can put that up. With Juju Smith-Schuster and Washington and Johnson out wide, and James Conner. And I'm going to pause there for a second because I don't think everyone remembers how good James Conner is. He's having some issues with injuries. I understand that. But if he and Ben can stay healthy, and really, that's the case for every team. Health is always going to be an issue. But if they stay healthy, this team is going to be back to where they were 2 or 3 years ago. So look for the Steelers to have a really strong season and James Conner to have a strong year out of the backfield. Now, so the easiest pick I'm going to make, it's the Baltimore Ravens winning this division with a 12-4 record. Now, Lamar Jackson will take, I don't want to say a step back, but he won't be as explosive or as surprising to the other teams as he was last year. I think his rushing yards will go down, as they should. You don't want him to get hurt. And his passing yards will actually increase a little bit, Don't expect him to get this many touchdowns per pass as he did last year, but I still think this is going to be a very strong offensive team with Marquise Brown and Mark Ingram in the backfield. They're very and Mark Andrews as well at the tight end position, and another solid defense. Look for this team, much like Pittsburgh, to be very strong on defense and very potent on offense. They're going to be a lot of fun to watch in the division, and that's actually why I have the Browns and the Bengals finishing with such low win totals, is because they're going to get four losses from the Steelers and from the Ravens. So those are my predictions. Let me know what you think. Now, up next is a coach who knows the AFC North very, very well because he was the offensive coordinator and wide receivers coach before that with the Bengals, and he was the head coach of the Browns when they drafted Baker Mayfield. So we're going to talk to Coach Hugh Jackson about quarterbacks, NFL football, and tequila. That's next. Very special guest with me this week. It's Hugh Jackson. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Oh, you're in outer space. I love it.
Absolutely. I am in outer space.
So I have a bunch of questions for you, but I want to start with one that I don't know how many people ask you this, because I know you've been coaching for a long time, and you coached in college, you obviously coached in the pros. Is there something about the college game you miss?
There is. I probably miss the pageantry more so than anything. Just the excitement of the games. Not that you don't get excited for NFL games, but boy, the students, you know, because they take a lot of pride in their schools. And to walk sometime through the stadium and come out of those particular tunnels and locker rooms, it's just a little bit different than the National Football League. Now, don't get me wrong. Like I said, there's a tremendous high on game day in the National Football League, but it's a different type of atmosphere than it is at a college.
All right. I was just always curious about it because you see some coaches kind of who've come into the pros and then go back. And I always wonder what's that thing that's drawing them back. And it makes sense. It makes sense.
Because a lot of us, that's what we came from. You know, we came from the college game, and probably a lot of us, in order to get these National Football League jobs, we've had a lot of success in college. So that's what you're used to. So you get drawn back to that.
Okay. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit because, you know, we're preparing for the NFL to come back. Mm-hmm. And we've seen, obviously, COVID is something I'd love not to talk about, but we have to.
Absolutely.
We've seen leagues like the NBA and the NHL have success with their bubble. We've seen Major League Baseball kind of struggle with their lack of a bubble. And the NHL is kind of going down that, or NFL is going down that road a little bit without the bubble. What are you hearing from coaches and players and, you know, how they're going to deal with it? Is there, obviously there's been a ton of players that have opted out, not as many as I thought, to be honest. So not too bad, but what are you hearing? And do you have,
well, here it's been tough. You know, everybody's trying to do the best job that they can to work through it, you know, work through everything that's going on. I think it's been difficult at best. You just saw this past week, all the false tests that happened. And so, I mean, there was numerous coaches that didn't work that day. There was numerous players that didn't work in certain organizations that day. And they're about to play a game here within less than 3 weeks. So they lost a very valuable coaching day.
Yeah.
You know, so, and can that happen again? Will that happen again? I think all of those things, because if you think about it, some teams, the players were on their way into the building and they stopped them and said, you can't come in, go back home, you know, because there's positive tests. And so then they call them later on and say, oh, by the way, they were all negative. Come on in and let's practice. You know?
Right. And if there's false positives, there's going to be false negatives. And that's the bigger concern, right? Because if it's a false positive, okay, you send them home. You got to figure that out. But a false negative, now you're sending someone in that could.
It could be really scary. That is a great. That could be the end all be all right there.
Yeah. And so have there been any talks, and I don't know if you know or not, but about expanding the rosters? So, you know, should there be, obviously someone test positive? Do they have an expanded roster? Do they increase the practice team so that they, you know, if they have fill-ins at a moment's notice, they can bring some extra guys in?
I think the rosters are expanded initially right now.
Yeah.
You know, from where they are. There's been no talk about what the rosters will be once the regular season starts. I think it's still going to be the same as it's been always. I don't think that will change, but I think that's a great idea, a great point that maybe they should consider that. And I say that just from an injury standpoint. When you look at what's going on right now, there's so many guys getting injured and banged up because they didn't have that off-season training. I mean, we can say what we want. That's what it is. I was involved with it in the strike year, and we came, and the players, you know, we had to handle it the right way to make sure these guys had a chance to get into the game. And what these guys are doing now with no preseason games and immediately going to play a game, that's going to be tough. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's one thing to kind of work out by yourself at your home gym. It's another to kind of get out and take a few hits. You know, the game speed's always a little bit different versus what you're doing on your own, for sure. Throughout your career, you know this. I don't know how many other people know it. You've had a lot of success, right? Like I ran through and I looked at, you know, when you were the offensive coordinator for the Raiders, they were the fourth-ranked offense. Darren McFadden had one of his best years. When you were the wide receivers coach with the Bengals, you had Chad Johnson and TJ, I always say his name wrong, Hushamanzada, both over 1,000 yards receiving. I think when you're the OC with the Bengals, Andy Dalton probably had his best years. And, you know, most people look at the playoff or the lack of success in the playoffs, but forget how good those teams were throughout the regular season. And the reason I bring all that stuff up is you understand the offensive side of the ball better than most. And there's been some big offensive shifts this offseason. So I want to throw out a couple of names to you, and I'd love your opinion on how you think they're going to adapt to their new systems or how their coaches are going to adapt to that. So obviously the big one, Brady to the Bucs. How does he fit into Bruce Arians' system, his plan? Do they change it more for Brady, or do they ask Brady to change?
Well, I think that's a great question. I don't think there's any question how that one's going to
– Right.
I think Tom is in control. I say that because you just brought a high-value player at the most important position, who's the GOAT of the National Football League, into your organization. He has immediate credibility with the players. He has immediate credibility with the coaches. This guy is a six-time Super Bowl-winning champion.
Right.
So you're going to do what he needs done.
Right.
If that's what smart coaches do. Now, do you help refine some of the things he does and cross the T's where maybe he didn't cross it and dot the I's maybe where he didn't? Yeah, that's what coaching is. But you have to let this guy be who he is, because that's when he's at his best.
Right.
So if you go change him and say, you're going to run Bruce Arians' system like Ben Roethlisberger did or whoever played quarterback for Bruce. Right. I don't think it works.
Right.
I think that would be a disaster. And I think Bruce is a smart enough coach. He knows that.
Right. So I'm going to talk about two starters and two backups, and I'll explain to you why in a minute. So the second one is Philip Rivers. So Rivers goes to the Colts. Mm-hmm. Same type of thing. He's a veteran guy. He's proven in the league. They're going to make adjustments for him. And how do you think he fits in with that kind of that Colts offense?
I think he will fit in well. I say that because – he's a veteran player, and nothing against Jacoby Brissett. He's better than Jacoby Brissett. I'll just be honest. And so you're talking about a potential future Hall of Fame player in Philip Rivers, who's now your quarterback. So it goes back to the same thing. You go back and you start to do those things that he's most comfortable at, because you need him to play at a high level. And if he does, the win total at the Colts are going to go way up. You know, so – the key to it is giving these guys, the two men you just mentioned, the right environments that allow them to be who they are and be the best versions of themselves, because they have a way of rallying teams around them. You know, Tom has shown that. Philip has shown that. So that's the best thing they can do for these guys.
So my next one is a little personal.
Okay.
As you can see, the Bears jersey in the background here.
I see it.
I do have a Bengals fan in the household, so we're going to get to the Bengals a little bit more in a second, but Nick Foles to the Bears. So I know he understands that system. Is that a move that, you know, as an offensive coordinator, you want a backup or potentially someone who can challenge the starter, who knows that system, who can help, you know, obviously he's there to push Mitch, help Mitch get better, but just in case of an injury or should he fail, you've got someone who you know can run an offense. Is that really the reason for Foles being there?
I think it's a combination of everything. I think, you bring a player there if you think he can truly help.
Yeah.
One, the football team, first and foremost. He got to bring value to the team. Number two, can he handle the environment that you're putting him in? Will he handle, because right now when he walks in, it's seen that he could be the starting quarterback. It might not be Mitch Trubisky. Right. Some guys don't want to be put in that situation. Some guys can handle it. I would think that that young man can handle it because that's been his career over the last 5-6 years. You know, the places he's been last, you know, he was the backup, became the starter, and away he went. And some places he was a starter. So I think they brought him there because I think they felt he was the missing link, that if Mitch wasn't ready to really take it to another level, that they have somebody that they believe in and trust that could do that.
Because when you have a defense like that, that can control the game, that window's small, right? You have to do everything you can to take advantage of it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, as you know, this day and age of free agency and the salary caps and the way they are and how you have to manage and massage that. And there's some players you don't want to let go, so you got to pay them. And some players you might have to let go. You have to make sure you have everything lined up right for that year.
Right.
So that you can be the best team you can be for that season.
And isn't that the beauty of football, right? It's maybe the one sport where a team that finished last can really, you know, every year we start as fans, as players, as coaches with, we can make the Super Bowl this year. And I think that says a lot about the league. And I think that's why the fan base is so strong.
Right. Because it starts in at the draft.
Right.
You know, when fans, I'm talking about from a fan's perspective, you're putting 10 to 12 new pieces of gold on your team. And maybe some of them can't even play, but the fans don't know that. What they know is you drafted them.
Right.
Okay. They played somewhere, so they should be good enough. You know, they should be able to compete. And sometimes that's not the case. Yeah, I'll be first to tell you that that's not the case. But, and that shows itself real quickly, you know. Yeah. But normally, you know, the teams that are not very good, they're normally the teams that are picking early. And that's why you have to have everything aligned the correct way, because if you don't, now you're wasting your window and you're wasting valuable assets that may not be good enough to play at a high level.
Yeah. So my last quarterback is one you're familiar with, because mm-hmm. I'll be honest, I'm surprised that he went and took a backup role. As I mentioned, I'm a Bears fan. My wife is a huge Bengals fan, so I hear a lot about this. I watch all their games. Andy Dalton to the Cowboys. I still believe I don't think he gets enough credit for as good of a quarterback as he is. And I was surprised that he went to somewhere like Dallas where, you know, Dak's obviously the starter and he's going to take a backup role. Did that surprise you? What went into that decision? You
know, Andy, it didn't surprise me because I think Andy wants to be in a situation on the downside of his career where he has a chance to win.
Yeah.
And put himself in a situation where he can experience something maybe that he didn't. He's won games and a lot of games in his career. What he didn't get a chance to do is win a playoff game. You know, so I think for Andy, being in Texas is important to him too, because that's where he went to college, you know, there. And so I think those pieces fit for him. At first, was I surprised that there wasn't a New England or there wasn't a Jacksonville or something like that that grabbed him? But I'm not going to say I personally talked to him, but I know what went into the conversation is that his body of work has been shown.
Yeah.
So I think what he wants to do now is put himself in a position where he'll have a chance to win. And I think he really believes winning will help lead him to this next opportunity more so than let me go over and be a starter for a team that might not be as good. Right. And I'm saying I'm playing, you know, I think that's how he sees it.
Yeah, because from a Dallas standpoint, it makes complete sense. You get in a backup who can lead a team who, you know, there was the contract stuff, right? If Dak were to hold out or if Dak were to get hurt, you're very confident with Andy coming in and taking over that offense. Yes. From their standpoint, I completely understood. So, you know, obviously we're talking a lot about quarterbacks. When you were in Cleveland, you drafted a young man. And in Baker, I'm curious to know, when you were there and you drafted him, what were those things in Baker Mayfield that you guys saw, hey, this guy's going to be a good NFL quarterback? And what are the things you think he still needs to do? Because he's almost there, right? What are those things he needs to work on to really take that next step?
What I saw was the arm talent. the ability to win, the desire to be great, the fire and passion that was in his belly to be one of the best. And I thought he would stop at nothing to have that happen. I think what has happened is coaching changes, system changes. They can kind of get a player off a little bit. I think he had a lot of success early, more success than most young guys. And I think going into year two, I think people thought it was just going to happen. It doesn't just happen. And I think he lost his fundamentals. When I watched the tape that I watched, fundamentally, he wasn't the Baker Mayfield that I know. You know, and so everything that's coming out of Cleveland has been the new footwork. So I think they're stressing that, you know, but you don't want it to be the new footwork and then something else falls off, you know. So I think it's going to be so important. And why did I say it that way? I said it that way because here comes a new staff, here comes a new emphasis. Here comes a new dynamic, and how fast can he grasp that? You know, how fast can he put all those things in his arsenal to be able to go play the way now this coach wants him to play?
You said so much valuable stuff there. So I'm going to try and dissect a couple of them because you mentioned kind of a new system and a new coach, and we see a lot of what we think are going to be good or great quarterbacks who go through head coach or offensive coordinator or, you know, quarterback coach, and they rotate. You know, Jay Cutler obviously comes to mind as an example, always seem to have a new offensive coordinator where they have some early success. And is it something you see in a lot of young quarterbacks where if they do have that early success, they get away from those fundamentals and those basics that created that initial success because now they're maybe trying to do too much or trying to do more because they're trying to get better?
No, I think if you go dive into some of these, and some of that, what you just mentioned, is a little true. But let's just take Baker's situation. The guy who was his quarterback coach, who was really involved in getting him to play at a very high level over those last 8 games, was not retained.
Right.
That makes a huge difference because he knew what buttons to push to get this guy to play, okay? And so in comes a new quarterback coach who didn't know him, and now Baker is probably feeling like, I got this, you know. And so this coach is probably a little apprehensive to jump in the fire pit with him because he's thinking, this guy's going to go be – he's the first pick of the draft. This guy's going to go be everything. And then all of a sudden it's not going good, and you're looking for answers, and it doesn't work. Yeah. You know, so I've seen that happen to players. I'm watching Jameis Winston now. He goes to New Orleans, and you know, people forget when he was at his best and when he played extremely, extremely well is with Dirk Cutter, you know, and that was his guy. That was the guy that gave him a platform to play at a high level. And they didn't win enough, but they had one of the best offenses in football. And James was playing well. So coaches, the pairing of coaches and quarterbacks and coordinators and quarterbacks and the play callers, it is a skill. You got to make sure that you have the right people doing it.
Yeah, I feel like not enough emphasis is made on those positional coaches, right? Like you were a wide receivers coach. A QB coach is huge in the development of a QB, right?
So important. He's everything. I mean, I coached Joe Flacco, and I know that in his first 2 years in the league, I gave him the right foundation for him to become what he became. And I really believe that Kenny Zampezi was doing that for Baker, and we'll see where he goes from there. But I've watched guys not make it because the coaching changed. You know, it really does affect those quarterbacks. Hmm.
So lastly, love to talk about what you're doing now. So last year you were a special assistant to the head coach with the Bengals. I know you're in Cincinnati now. What's the plan for this year? And I promise we'll talk about the vodka in a minute too.
Oh, no, that's okay. Going life. You know, I am a full-time dad, and I have a tequila brand. I have some other things I'm involved in. There are some football things that I do personally for people. So that's been good. But I do want to get back to coach as fast as I can. My goal is next season be coaching back in the league. And maybe as a coordinator, maybe as a position coach, but go back and finish this thing off the right way. But I've found other things to do that excite me, you know, and I'm not going to be afraid when it is time to walk away from it all, because I think I'll be better prepared, because I know what it felt like for now over a year and a half or almost two, that at first you get kind of lost. You don't know what to do. And then you have to pivot and find things to do. And so it's forced me to prepare myself for when it is over that I'm ready to make that switch.
Well, I'm glad that we're going to, I hope we see you coaching sooner than later, because you're a great coach. Tell me a little bit about the tequila brand.
That's USDA 100% Gran Leyenda organic tequila. And it's out of Amatitan, is in Guadalajara. And that's where we make everything at. And it's shipped to us in California. And it's estate grown, it's handcrafted. It's the best, and we're growing it. We're starting to scale it. Matter of fact, we have a deal with Raider Nation, the Black Hole, and so they're putting our brand out everywhere. We're very excited about that.
How did you get involved? You're just a big tequila drinker, or they reached out to you? How did you get involved with the tequila brand?
No, I wasn't a tequila drinker at all. I had a personal friend from high school who knew the guy who was the owner. He's a minority owner. He's the only my black owner in the world in tequila. So he needed some assistance. We partnered, and it's been an unbelievable relationship, and we're doing some great things.
That's fantastic. Coach, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it, and I hope we can talk again real soon.
Thank you. You got it, buddy.
The NBA's second round is well underway, and we've already got some huge surprises. The Miami Heat got off to a 3-0 lead. Huge surprise. We thought the Bucks were going to the finals. But then in game number 4, Giannis Antetokounmpo got hurt, and yet the Bucks found a way, after losing the Greek Freak in the first quarter, to get a gutsy overtime win. However, I think their luck is going to run out in game number 5, and that's going to be the end of the Bucks. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens to Milwaukee in the offseason after a very, very disappointing second round exit. But for the Heat, I hate to say I told you so, but when this playoff started, I told you the most dangerous team in the NBA and the scariest player was the Miami Heat and Jimmy Butler. I told you he wasn't the issue in Philadelphia, and this team has really come together with some great shooting from the likes of Tyler Hero and others, as well as actually Goran Dragic has been playing amazing. Obviously, Jimmy Butler has shown that he is a superstar in this league, and Bam is doing his thing on defense. This team is going to have a really good shot at making the finals against either the Celtics or the Raptors. To maybe the most disappointing team in the bubble, kind of is the Raptors. Because although they're only down 3-2, and they were 0.5 seconds away from now, I guess, being down 3-0 at one point in the series, but the fact that they've lost two games by such a huge margin, like not showing up for a game is a sign of a bad coach. But we know that Nick Nurse isn't a bad coach. He's actually a great coach. So is Boston just that much better than the Raptors are? I don't know. But I got to tell you, I think they still push this series to 7, but I'm kind of liking the Celtics versus the Heat for the Eastern Finals. Now to the West, the Lakers and Rockets. The Lakers did what they seemed to do, well, in the first round and the second round, is lose the first game. But I wouldn't worry too much about the Lakers. Between LeBron James and Anthony Davis, this team will pull it together. And they'll win this series in 6. I just don't like, I picked Houston to lose in the first round to OKC, and that series went 7. So look for the Lakers to dispatch of the Rockets here in 6 games. Then to the Clippers and Nuggets. Gotta tell you, a surprise game 2 victory for me by the Nuggets. Jamal Murray is also showing that he is a star on the biggest stage. But I think the Nuggets are still too deep. They're too talented. And even though they clearly have some chemistry issues, this is going to be the team to beat in the NBA Finals. I had them, as you remember, as my pick to make it to the finals and win, although it was against the Raptors, so that might not happen. But I'm still sticking with that early pick of the Clippers making it and taking the title this year in the bubble. Going into this year's NHL playoffs, I had a lot of doubts about the Tampa Bay Lightning. It was something that just was in my gut that was eating away at me. But I'm big enough of a man to say I was wrong. They've proven me wrong each round as I've picked them to lose, and they continue to go on. Now, this series against the Islanders, they're coming up an Islander team that looks really good in the playoffs. But, see, I'm stopping myself. I can't even bring myself to say it. But I think the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to win the Stanley Cup final this year. They have shown to be the best team in the bubble and the best team in the NHL. I think they're going to make pretty quick work of the Islanders in five, maybe the Islanders if they can get hot, six, but I'm probably thinking Tampa Bay in five. And then they're going to meet another surprise team, the Dallas Stars, in the final. I think the Stars are going to take the Knights six or seven games, however. This is going to be a pretty good series. I still like the Golden Knights and what they do on defense. However, I think the Stars are actually another team kind of on a mission this season, and they will face the Lightning in the finals. Let me know what your picks are for the NHL finals. I've got Lightning beating the Stars. Who do you got? Major League Baseball is about two-thirds of the way through their 60-game season, and there's been some big surprises. The Rays and the Jays in the AL East sitting on top of the Yankees? Yeah, it's true. In fact, if the playoffs were to start today, the Rays and the Jays would be in it. That is a huge surprise. Also, you have my Cubbies sitting on top of their division. I don't think that's a surprise because I think the Cubbies are going to make it all the way to the World Series this year. Then you've got the Braves, another surprising team out in the NL. And if you listen to our pre-baseball show, our MLB insider told you to watch for the Chicago White Sox. They're also sitting atop their division. So look for next week. We're going to be bringing back our MLB insider, and we're going to talk about who's making it to the playoffs and who he thinks are going to be in the World Series. But there's one kind of, it's now not a dark cloud. It's almost like a light gray cloud hanging over Major League Baseball. I told you that I wasn't a big fan of them playing this season. I didn't think their lack of a bubble was good for the players, for the league, for the managers, for baseball in general. I said they should probably just cancel the season and work out their contract negotiations and start fresh next year. Well, I don't want to say they proved me wrong. However, they're finding a way to make it work. Although, when you look at their COVID situation, they announced this week that they had seven more positive tests. That number includes three players and four staff members. While five of the seven were MLB club personnel, and only two were alternate site personnel. So in total, 12,000 or so COVID-19 test samples were recorded over the last weeks. Since the MLB and MLBPA began testing, they've had about 78,000 tests and 82 have been positive, 54 of which have been players, and 84 positive tests have occurred among 19 teams. Most recently, it's the New York Mets that have had to postpone some games. However, they're finding a way to make it work. Now for the fix. In this week's episode of The Fix, we're going to help you fix your fantasy football team. And we're going to do it in a couple of ways. First off, I'm going to give you some words of encouragement, because here's one thing I know playing fantasy football for a few decades now. One, it doesn't matter how good your draft is, you could still lose. Two, it doesn't matter how bad your draft is, you can still win. Because the key to winning in fantasy football is the adjustments you make from week to week. It's how you utilize the waiver wire and picking up guys a week early and dropping them a week early. It's kind of like playing real football. It's the adjustments that the coaches make in-game and from week to week that makes them successful. Much like the Patriots, letting go of players when they're just about to drop off and picking up those young guys right before they're about to boom. So how do you do that? How can you keep up with everything that's happening in the NFL and making those early pickups from your waiver wire? Well, the best way to do it is to watch Fantasy Fluent Live every Wednesday night. I'm going to be your host. We're going to talk about who to pick up on the waiver wire, who to sit, who to start, and who to pick up off the waiver wire. We'll also bring in some special guests, and they'll tell you what they think. So join us every week for Fantasy Fluent Live. Also, as part of the Worst Take Network, we have a special offer for those that want to do some prop bets and can use Thrive Fantasy. Let's get to that promo next. This week's episode of the Sports Fluent Podcast is brought to you by Thrive Fantasy. Come prop up on Thrive Fantasy this season. Thrive Fantasy is a daily fantasy sports app for players' props. They've eliminated the need to do countless hours of research because they only ask you about the top-tier athletes in each respective sport. Use promo code WTN when you sign up, and you will receive an instant $20 bonus on your first deposit of $20 or more. You can download Thrive Fantasy on the App Store or Play Store by visiting their website at thrivefantasy.com. Sign up today and prop up. That's it for episode 40 of the Sports Fluent Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at sports_fluent, or check out all the links on sportsfluent.com. Until next week, are you fluent?